So in yesterday, I mentioned that John is a strong contender for the most Jewish of the Gospels. And the least Jewish of the Gospels is Luke. The man is a Gentile by birth. But have you ever noticed, though, that if you're not a part of a particular community, you have to work two times as hard so as to understand how they think and how they act? I'm going to tell you this from my own personal experience about Catholics. You are strange people. Incredibly, incredibly strange. And I have spent many years in perplexity and confusion trying to figure out your behavior patterns. And any one of us who are converts would generally agree. Because what happens is you have certain movements, certain actions that make entirely in sense, total sense to you. But have you ever noticed that sometimes converts are too crazy and they go too far in certain directions? That's because they haven't seen the check or the balance that tells you to slow down right here. And this is why the faith is a woven garment that you have to take it all. Because all the checks and balances are hidden in all the different elements and parts of the mystery of our faith. And which is why if we reduce our faith to an ideology or an idea, or as people kind of refer to in a derogatory fashion as being a cafeteria Catholic, and people from all across the spectrum do this, that we wind up missing or neglecting something that should help us keep our heads screwed on in the proper fashion. And so when you're a cradle Catholic, you're born with these things all around you. You know, you learn how to put up with certain types of people because they're in your church. And you learn how to balance all of these different things without even knowing that you're balancing them. And the problem is that it's really hard then when you're outside of your element to know what's going on. It's really hard when you're outside of that interior element to be able to say, what is it that holds this whole thing together? What is our hope? What's the balance of the faith? And usually we encounter it in our moments of despair. And this is where Jesus meets these two disciples on the road. We had hoped that he would be the one to redeem all of Israel. We had hoped that this new pope would change everything. We had hoped that this council would have changed the face of the church. We had hoped that this new pastor wouldn't be crazy. Sorry to dash your hopes. We had hoped that blah, 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 blah. And it's really important to keep your ear to that particular despair in your own heart and in the heart of your loved ones. And in the heart of the world. Because it reveals our false gods. They had placed their hope in the visible renewal of Israel. And it was dashed because they thought that Jesus would be the Messiah that would restore the line of David, build an army, and then establish the kingdom all over again. Thinking in profoundly worldly terms. And of course, later on, when Luke's gospel is being written, there's a little known fact, but we have certain records of it, that when the Jewish people, later, just around the time that Luke's gospel is being written, they rebelled against the Roman authorities in a military fashion. They figured that if God isn't going to send a Messiah, we're going to do the work ourselves. And so there was an armed rebellion against the Roman Empire. And, of course, some of the records that we have kind of flowerily display the Romans as, you know, well, we didn't really want to flatten your entire city and destroy your temple, but what are we supposed to do? Like, that's just, yeah. But what happens is the Jewish rebels hated the Christians because they didn't fight with them. And the Christians' answer was, you're fighting to defend the temple. But the temple is now obsolete. It's gone now. Christ has replaced it. We love it. We used to pray there until you kicked us out. But it's not going to save you. Can you just imagine for a moment, and it's not as severe, if all of a sudden some government in Europe got really angry and just flattened St. Peter's Basilica and all of the major Roman basilicas in the city of Rome. That would be less traumatic than what happened to the Jewish people. Less traumatic. Because they had one temple, and that thing, that place, was where they put their hope. And they had taken several centuries after the fact to reorient their minds and be able to go, oh, how do we live now? We can't live in Israel. We have no temple. How do we go forward? And this is what the disciples are going through when they encounter Jesus on the way. And this is the funny part. Jesus asks them what makes them so sad. Hey guys, what's going on? You don't know? Sure, I don't know. Fine. Just go ahead and tell me. Like, you can't help but appreciate the humor of the Savior in a moment like this. It's like when your kids would have just cried and cried about how you don't understand grade 10 politics, and you're like, I understand, it's just stupid. That's almost what Jesus is doing today. Almost what he's doing today. Except in his case, it's not patronizing. What he's doing is he's digging at them. He wants them to understand what their pain was. Because usually it's only on the face of terrible grief that you actually know what you fear the most. And we can often pretend it doesn't exist with nice language. But when it hits us, we realize how attached we were to it. And so Jesus says to them, did you expect something else from the Messiah? What was your expectation? Now, he can be pretty tough on them, but he should be tougher on us. Because we have the image of the crucified Messiah in the front of all of our churches. We should know better. And yet we despair too. And that's why we have to undergo this Easter season every year. And it's a memorialization of it. We go back to this one fundamental and principal mystery. What were you hoping for? And eventually, faith doesn't come when you have an answer to that question. Faith comes when you know that God's answer is the best. Not when you say, well, you know, if A comes to pass, then I can rely on B, and if B comes to pass, then I can rely on C. That's how people usually try to navigate the world. You know you believe when you say, I have no idea what tomorrow will bring, but if I'm doing your will, and I love you, and I trust you, that is what's best. And you can only imagine what type of world we would be, what type of Christians we would be if that were our attitude, if that were the way we approached the resurrection. God, and it sounds so tacky, and I almost resist saying it, God has a plan for each of us. It just sounds so ugh. But he does. He does. And sometimes our baptismal water is from the fonts of our own tears. But we can skip a lot of those pains if right at the beginning we do exactly what Jesus warned us before he was arrested, before he suffered and died, to be able to say, they will reject you, but I am with you always.